whatever you get into, besides something that's illegal, I said, you find something and you get a passion for it, give it your best. You go into it not half-stepping, but you got to go into it with a positive attitude, because everything is not going to work for you.
Hello and welcome to A Pixie from Kilmarnock, a program about the people, places, and the history of the Northern Neck of Virginia. I'm your host, Pixie E. Curry. Growing up on the Northern Neck, as it probably is for most small town folks, family is everything. The family that included the whole neighborhood, the whole community. One lesson to be learned from the family is defining leadership and what it means to be a leader. The definition to some was how to lead yourself, being not afraid to challenge yourself, channeling your talents and skills into achieving your goals to live your passion. One such leader is Captain Matthews Gaskins Jr., the youngest black captain for the Omega Protein Corporation. This is part two of my April 2021 interview with Captain Matt. He started his lessons in a village that bears his family name. He was a very young business owner, age 7 to be exact, and from there, he never looked back. As being a black captain and probably bringing in record numbers of fish or loads, did you ever encounter racism as being a black captain?
Well, baby, tell you what, racism now in our business is the same. And a good example is we still had no captains up there after your uncle. And I even brought it to their attention that we need some color on the bay. And they was like, well, Captain Matt, what do you mean? Said, I can't bring it to you no simpler than that. If you would look at the percentage of the employees that work there, you will find that most of the employees there that's on those boats are black men. And they have a union up there now, which I have always thought was no good for the business. Just good for them. Working up north and working down south is totally different. We run things a little different down here. And as far as with me being in this business, as long as I have been, and especially being a young black captain, we always had the worst equipment. We always had the worst boats. We would hire, you know, good people to work for us. Yeah, and we were taking the Hispanics came in. None of the white captains wanted the Hispanics. And they put a bunch of them on the boat with me and told me, well, Captain Matt, since they don't want them, well, you take some of them and train them. Well, to their surprise, those guys already knew how to fish. So I had a big advantage over them. But when I went through that discrimination and racism, I was also taught to speak your mind. If you make a company millions of dollars and they won't give you what you want, and there was competition out there that was seeking to hire good captains, and I was one of those. I just said, well, if you can't give me what I want, then I'll just go and try to find a job somewhere else. And that would always get their attention. So we would have to go through those kind of things, threatening to leave, to just get a new net or to get a new set of purse boats to work with. And it seemed like with me being a top captain, they would take the top three captains and give them all an extra new net because of how hard they worked. But if I was the third boat captain, they would drop it to two so that I couldn't get an advantage of the other captain. But I caught a lot of fish on my own where I didn't use the planes to catch fish because I used a lot of common sense, and I also asked the Lord every day to order my steps. And I tell you, he's still ordering my steps now, and that's why I'm still doing it, and that's why I'm still good at doing what I do. But it's only from just using common sense, because if they spot fish on Sunday in Texas, and they have a few fish to the east in Louisiana, our whole fleet would go west to where the good fish were, and I would be by myself, and I would go to east where the little bit of fish were. But see, I could load my boat with the little bit of fish, because they are all down there in a gang, messing up the good fish, and then with me being there where I'm at, my fish would stay in good shape, and I'd get back to the dock before them, and they couldn't understand how I was beating all of these experienced captains. And Captain Gus was one of the ones who would always say that, "Hey, Captain Matt, boy," he then one of the captains said, "Well, he think like a fish." You know, but I never let him on to him to know that, no, I just use common sense. I can't go fishing with y'all. And we had favoritism from the planes also, you know. If they had a place of fish that was 200,000 fish in it and a place that was 50,000 fish in it, and I was the first boat to get there, where you think they're going to drop me off and catch? They're going to put me on the 50. And the boat behind me, which is the white captain, they're going to put him on the 200. And that still goes on today.
Uncle Carl was kind of talking about that, and I didn't really understand what he was saying when he was say they will wait for you to get to the dock, and then they will go out after you came in and get your catch. Not your catch, but where you had been dropping your nets. They will wait for you to come into dock, and then they will go out and catch your fish. Am I saying that correctly?
Well, what they would do, see, Carl did like me. And Carl, I always commend him because Carl was in a white man's world up here. He was the only man of color. But Carl did well every year. Carl maintained over a 40 million average. He kept a good crew. And on the bay, those guys, they did have good boats, and all of them had good first boats. But Carl used to always get the short end of the stick. But Carl used the knowledge that he had from fishing to go to different places to go fishing. Carl could be by himself at a place fishing. And the planes would actually see fish there. But Carl would catch them on his own, and then he would come in to unload, and then the planes would tell, well, I'd like to get two or three boats over here where Carl was. You know, so that already tells you that, hey, those fish was there when Carl was there, but he had no help from the planes to catch them. But now he wants three more boats there so that they can come over and load and come to the dock. So he had to go through that his whole career.
That's what he was telling me, and I was trying to understand what he was saying. Racism is ugly, just ugly.
It really is, baby.
And then the season would end. Y'all would come on home. You know, what was that like, just dividing your time between living in Louisiana and then back home on the Northern Neck?
Yeah. Pixie, that was the hardest part of it because I was divorced twice. And as far as with your kids, you know, I would come to work for 6 months out of the year, and I leave home, and my kid was up to my knees, and then I come back, and they're up to my waist when I get back. So that was real tough, especially when I was a loving father and going to work to provide for them. I wanted them to have the best in life, a roof over their head, a good education. And I tell you what, you had to sacrifice to do what we have done. As you know, it's one of the most dangerous jobs in the world. And see, in our season in the Gulf, started, we had a start date and a stop date. In Virginia, they go to work when they start. They don't know when they're going to stop. They don't have a stop date. The bay closed November the 17th, and then they got to go on the outside beaches, and they got to make those long trips to North Carolina or up to New York somewhere to catch fish. And I did that for a long time until I said, well, I'm getting too old to fight these rough seas now. That's when I started Austin in the winter. You know, I would work up there until maybe Christmas, and then I would Austin after that. So, but yeah, we sacrificed. We really did have to sacrifice the time. And seeing, I always said it was hard on my marriage, being away from home, especially when you're married to a lady who have a career also. It wasn't good. The marriages didn't last long, but the kids are with me for life. I do have an excellent relationship with my children, though.
You were saying you oystered. Did you oyster down in Louisiana, or did you come back to home?
I oystered in Virginia. My oyster life was like my fishing life. I wanted to oyster. I oystered in the Potomac River, which was in Maryland, and I oystered to all of the Virginia waters from Colonial Beach over to Wacomico, over to the Rappahannock, Matthews, down the James River, which was in Newport News, Virginia, and Hampton. I have oystered all of the waters, and then I moved to Louisiana permanently in 1999, and I oystered here. And I really loved oystering here because I could make $600-$700 a day by 12 o'clock. And it was such an easy living because my father used to always tell me, if I was young as you, I would be down in Louisiana oystering. So after my divorces and my youngest daughter, she lives here in Louisiana. I've been with her since day one. I started Austin, and I had my own fleet of boats, had my own crews, and I made more money in Austin than I did fishing. Mm. But I could go to work when I wanted to, and if I didn't want to go, if it was too cold or the weather was too bad, I could stay home. But being a top waterman, I would go out in on the cold days and on the rough days because I had the boats that could handle it. I always had the best equipment that you could have, too. I never did want to use some halfway equipment that wasn't any good. They started dredging oysters, which guys down here in Louisiana, they didn't know about dredging because in Virginia, like in the Rappahannock, they're oyster using the patent farms. Now they don't do the hand jobbing no more. And that's what they brought back down here to Louisiana. They stopped the dredging and wanted us to go back to doing it the old-fashioned way with tongs. I said, no, I can't do that no more, man. I did that when I was a young man. I said I learned everything. I also crabbed and gill netted, you know, everything on the water I did. But I mastered the dredge down here because these guys didn't know nothing about dredging. I've been lifting weights all my life, so I had a dredge built. And these guys had three men pulling their dredges in the boat and dumping the oysters on the cardboard and then throwing the dredge back overboard. I had my dredge, and I pulled my dredge in by myself, throw it on the cardboard, throw it back overboard. It was like, man, I hate to see that man in a dog alley. He would hurt you. But it was an art to everything that you do, and I always tried to master what I did. And if you master what you do, you have to study it, you know, unless you're a natural. But everything that I have ever done, you know, I had different businesses detailing. I wanted to clean your car better than it was when you got it. I wanted it to look like it did when you first bought it or if it came off the showcase floor. I wanted to get a car that somebody brought in here that was ugly and dirty, and they didn't think that I would look like it did, and I would make it look so good that they wouldn't even think it was their car. I had a moving business where I would actually go and move you from Maryland to Newport News. You know, everything that I got into, I was a car salesman. I had my license to sell cars. I would go to auctions and buy cars only during income tax time. I didn't want to get into that full time, but I went to get calls for people that, because like I said, today now, you go in the bank and try to get a loan for a car and you get denied, or you got a high interest rate, I would go to these auctions and buy cars that was affordable for them, and they would buy them from me. And they really did appreciate that. And I would only do it in January and February. And I got a lot of people still driving the cars that I would sold them, but they are the things that I did in the off season from working. But I always did something where I know that there was a high demand for it. You know, as far as to make money, I still do landscaping. And when I was home last week, people was calling me wanting to know, Matt, are you going to be doing any landscaping? Because, you know, you really leave people with a good impression. If you do good work, they're going to try to hire you again, you know. I always give it my best.
Times has changed, the environment has changed, the climate has made changes to the environment and to the industry. But, you know, seafood still is what?
Big demand.
It's a big demand. And Louisiana and Virginia, they're almost, you know, they're almost like sisters because so many of the people that lived in Virginia went to Louisiana. They either came back or either they just stayed there. So many people. What are some of the things that you miss about not being on the Northern Neck?
Well, I miss everything on the Northern Neck because I still love the Northern Neck. I really miss coming to Louisiana at age 17 and working here. I made one class reunion, and I think that was probably the 20th year we were out. And now you're looking at we almost at 50 for a reunion. And I miss I miss the people there. Just like yourself. I can't remember the last time I saw you. And like I said, as far as the memories, we tend to not think that that was 50 years ago. You know, it seems like it wasn't that long ago.
Yes.
And me still being a very active person, when I do run up on lot of my old friends, they look at me and say, Lord, Matt, you really take good care of yourself, or what do you do? But it's just being active, I think. I never was a drinker, smoker, you know, especially I always believe in that old saying, you get older and wise. I'm a strong believer in that. Don't make the same mistakes that you did when you was young while you're old. And I think, and I don't let too much worry in there, because sometimes it's like the serenity prayer, you know. You can't change what's already been done. You don't dwell on it. I don't live in the past. I try to live today, and it's for today. Of course, tomorrow is not promised to us, and I never make plans. I always let things come as they are. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen. If I decide to jump in my truck and go home, I'm blessed to have a home there and home here. I can go jump in my truck with my wallet and don't even take clothes with me and go home because I got clothes there. But I really miss my being around my grandkids now growing up. Man, I missed out on my kids' lives. Now my grandkids have graduated from school and they are out there. I've got a grandson that just got an award for writing the number one Billboard song there for Trayvon Wallace, my grandson. He was in L.A., but he was with the group Six Pound Down. And he ever since he was young, he told me, Pop, I'm going into the music business. And I said, son, when you go into it, just as give them your best and the sky's the limit. And they reached the number one song on the charts. He wrote the album for Trayvon. My son is Trayvon. Three or four of his songs is on that album. And the song that went number one, he wrote it for him. And he performs also, sings. And so he is pursuing his dream. Now he's in Atlanta. He told me he wants to come and spend some time with Pop. And I told him Pop was going back to work. So he was like, Pop, are you ever going to stop? And I said, man, I'll know when it's time to stop. And yeah, man, that's what I miss most of all is the people. And, of course, you know, a lot of the people who was of our era are gone. That's why I decided to, in 97, I built a new home up there for when I retired to go back to the Northern Neck, because that's where I want to spend my last days, where I grew up at. You know, my mom was blessed to have her still living at 91 years old. She still has her mind. She don't walk anymore, but I'm strong enough to pick up, put in a chair, and put in a car and ride her. So, and she's happy about that.
That's a blessing.
My baby sister, she's my best friend, Sherry Gregory. I always tell her, she said, I'm one of your daughters after our father passed away. She said, Dad is gone, but I still got Matt. So I've been her, a guardian of hers, ever since she was a little girl. That just has stayed with us. And I cherish our relationship. My brother, my youngest brother, he's my best friend also. So him and I spend a lot of time together, but they spend a lot of time with me growing up. My oldest nephew, he has where we used to have our team shop in Wings, where we all grew up at, with carrying the jukebox and shooting pool and dancing and partying. My father left me that land, so now we have put a lunch wagon there for the community. That's still a memorable piece of land right there, and I want to take and make it out of a little park for a memorial for my father and my mother once she's deceased. But that's what I want to do. It's a lot of things I want to do at home, you know. Next year, and Lord bless us that we don't have any hurricanes this summer. My goal this winter was to come home and spend the whole winter. And I wanted to do some things there in the community. I still have my seafood business. I still bring shrimp up there to warehouses around there where I can bring food from here and sell it up there. Nothing like a Gulf shrimp.
Like tell me about it.
Right behind the oyster. Yep. So that's what I missed there.
You were talking about the teen shop. Now that I won't even go into my little. Yeah. I got in trouble going to that teen shop.
The teen shop to talk.
Ooh. But you know, as we was growing up, you know, where do you go for recreation? Where do you go to have fun? On dates, what do you used to do?
Mm-hmm. Well, I tell you, baby, man, dates for us, man, growing up, man. Look, we had Churchill Beach. We had Crosby's Snack Bar that opened almost all night long. We could get some food. we had, which was Miss Hatch, then the Doggett Brothers, and then Rice is In, and boy, and that was on this side, Crawford's Corner. But then all we had to do was go on down the road, cross the Wicomico Bridge, Three Point Bridge, and go over there and hit the Augusta, Old Alvina's, Hattie's, Cook's Corners that wasn't no bigger than a toilet, but it had a million people there.
Like Rice is, like you said, as big as somebody's kitchen, and it'd be a million people. A million people sitting outside.
But then we had fun.
I didn't get to do that. See, that's the thing. Being girls in JC's family, you didn't get to do much of anything. That's why going to the teen shop, I got in trouble because there was no way I was supposed to be down there. But I went down there.
You went to the best place. You went to the best place and the most calmest place to go. You shouldn't have gotten in no trouble for coming.
Well, the reason why I got into trouble is because I wasn't supposed to be there, and I left my purse there. And I had to come back and get my purse. So I had to figure out how can I get the car back? How can I explain when I was supposed to be at the movies? When we had the movies in Kilmarnock, that's where me and my sister Angela, that's where we were supposed to have gone. But no, we went down to the teen shop instead. I left my whole purse. So I had to go back. That's how I got in trouble. Oh, my gosh.
Well, I tell you what, dear. So we had the recreation center that was right up there where y'all were.
I know. Didn't get to go there either.
Well, man, I tell you, man, every time I go past that place, I just think about the dances and mm-hmm. the parties.
The cabarets.
Man. Well, we had the fisherman balls when we came home from Louisiana. Man, look, it was just like having the Grammy Awards, the music awards, because your boyfriend and the girlfriend would go to Richmond or down to Newport News, and they would buy the matching outfits or the suits, man, and boy, and everybody was trying to outclean everybody else. Then they started having the best dressed couple, and man, I tell you, it was something to see. And then I ran a club for 5 years in Matthews County, Club 14.
Club 14.
And I started having fisherman ball. Yeah. And I tell you, man, so that's why I feel so bad for the generation now, because they don't have the opportunity to go up. We could go on to Richmond County to Bob's Grill, Soul Tahiti, and then we could go up Westmoreland to Furman Dixon's, or we could go to Tappahannock to Big O. I mean, man, we just had a lot of places that we could go to have fun. In fact, during that time, you know, of course, some things happen, you know, fight. But as far as, you know, boys might have had a fight, but at the end of the night, those guys was back in the dance floor dancing with the girls. So, you know, it wasn't like it is today, you know. And I really just can't stand to see that, you know. And now with my daughter being 18 years old, we have a big backyard, and I allow them to have a limited amount of people to party, because I know I can keep my eye on them here, and I'd rather for them to be here than be out here with these going on now in this world. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do. I always thought it was pretty sad, you know, no type of recreation for young people that they could go and, you know, just safely, you know, have fun and just having fun. And I always thought that if someone wanted to really invest monies, that would be the first thing, is find some kind of different outlets for kids.
Well, they would make it too hard for you now as board of supervisor, man, and just to try to get it, because I had talked about it with some people. As a matter of fact, I even got a call a couple of years ago to ask me to come back and open up Club 14 again. So I told them that at my age now, I couldn't even think about it, you know, and with the generation that's here now. But as far as to have something for them, you know, like the Masons, they have the place through Good Luck Road, but, you know, they have a crowd there now. As far as our generation, you know, to say to have something on now, you'll have a lot of elders, or older guys still fishing. They probably would enjoy coming out on a Saturday night and having a good time and have a flashback, thinking that we can still dance. We probably could go out and do a dance that we did back in the 80s. So it would be better than what you're doing these days now, because they're all up on you now. So we will keep our distance.
Oh, please.
And I think it would be great just getting that lunch wagon down in Waynesville, man, that was a tough job to get the permit and things there because you had so many people trying to block, and that's where the racism comes in again for somebody trying to do something positive, and you got people riding by that have restaurants up in town thinking that they're going to lose the dollar because people out there drinking Northern Neck ginger ales are saying that they around there drinking beer, you know, and then they believe in what they say. So we had to really go through that. Finally got all the paperwork and all, you know, to open up the business. And it's just hard. Try to make it hard for our people, man. But, you know, you got to stand your ground and fight to do that. You're going to come up victorious. I do know that.
You are listening to A Pixie from Kilmonic with part two of my interview with Captain Matthews Gaskins, Jr. We relive some of the good times of childhood and about hope that the community can bring some of that good old time fun back. What are your favorite foods, what could be considered staple on the neck?
Well, I am a seafood lover. As far as with shrimp, oysters, fish, scallops, or crab legs, I'm not one of those people from the Northern Neck that actually sit down at the table and open them crabs up and get the meat out. I would go buy me a pound of crab meat and get me some Old Bay and some vinegar and some salt and pepper.
We call you lazy.
No. Down here, I have a friend that gets the crab. He got crab pickles there. And I can go there, and I can get me that lump meat, and he'll still sell it to me for $14, and price of it at home now. It was ridiculous, and I tell him that I can get lump meat here, jumbo lump at that, for that price. And then I bring that home to my sister, and she got. Well, when I come home to Virginia, I bring shrimp, I bring the crab meat, I bring Richard sausage, that's a sausage here that's smoked, I bring what they call boudin and crackling. They are the things that people want from here, and then they have chickens that's stuffed with rice dressing, crawfish dressing, different kind of things, but it's gotten to be a hit up there. And some of the guys that have came here to work, they'll call me and say, well, Matt, can you bring me, some of these things? And I'll pick them up and bring them up there, put them in the coolers with the shrimp and stuff, you know, and they love it. And then they let somebody else eat some of it. And next thing you know, now they want to know, can I bring some of them up there to sell? I said, no, I'm just really concentrating on just selling shrimp. I don't want to sell chickens and and all of that kind of stuff.
That's the stuff that you would bring them from Louisiana to Virginia.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, certain things in Virginia, the hackfish, the banner sausage, the king syrup, and the Northern Neck ginger ales would be what I would bring from Virginia to down south.
I never heard of that. What is boudin?
Yeah, boudin. Boudin is they have different spices, rice, chopped liver, or some type of sausage in it, and it's kind of wrapped in a sausage link. You just put it in the oven or whatever. Very good. A lot of people like it. Some people, man, they just love it, you know. And like I said, it's just certain Louisiana food. Like I said, me, I'm a seafood person. I love my seafood, and then oysters. I love oyster Rockefeller. I like oysters wrapped with bacon and cheese melted over them. A lot of people that say that they don't eat oysters, if they try them a different way than an oyster stew, you can't beat it.
Milk or without milk?
I do it either or. Yep. So I miss a lot of the meals that my mom used to cook. Like I tell the boys, man, about mama used to make what we call it, corned beef hash. Mama would make that with the potatoes and take that corned beef and put it in that pot and have that like a soup with them potatoes in that corned beef, man. And she had some homemade rolls with that. And I'm going to tell you, that would be a meal all by itself. And I still make that. I make that on the boat. Crab cake. Get my mom's recipe, and I make my own crab cakes on the boat. And the guys, they love them because down here they use so much bread. You know, they're so breaded. I keep mine natural. I use maybe crackers in mine to keep them together. Egg. But I put them together, man. I told them, y'all buy the crab meat, I'll cook the crab cake. Because I was buying the crab meat, cooking the crab, and they was eating them. So I was like, nah, I ain't going to be that generous to y'all. Y'all bring some crab meat on the boat, and I'll cook them for you. Just like shrimp and oysters, we still keep that tradition going. Watermen will help one another. It's like your dad. See, I knew your dad and crabbing and stuff because, I mean, your dad and my dad were good friends. And like I said, he was a good waterman.
Yes, he was.
And those guys would help each other. If one needed something, man, they call him on the phone, and you go out there in that garage, and I guarantee you somebody would have what you want.
That's for real. That's for real.
Yep.
What would be your advice to your 15 or 16-year-old self, niece, nephew, son, daughter? What would you say to them what life is going to be like and how to figure it out?
I would tell them that whatever you get into, besides something that's illegal, I said, you find something and you get a passion for it. Give it your best. You go into it not half-stepping, but you got to go into it with a positive attitude because everything is not going to work for you. If one thing fails, you push that aside and you go to something else. And see, me, I have really been a good mentor to a lot of my nieces and nephews, people in the community. You know, I've had grandparents to come back and tell me, man, boy, my grandchild, boy, he said, boy, when I grow up, I want to be like Matt. And that guy, now, when I was younger, I didn't want them boys to grow up to be like me because I was on the wild side. It's like I always say a picture. I always wanted the best. I wanted the prettiest car. I wanted the fastest car. But in order to have it, you have to work for it. I don't want nobody to give it to me. I wanted to get up there and work for it. And that's what I instill in my children. And I compliment and I'll text my children all the time and say how proud I am of y'all. Because I pass, like I said, if you pass that work ethic on to them and you instill it in them, it's going to work out because all of my kids now have a profession, but they have a side job. Tracy, she's an administrator at nursing homes, and she has her photography business. One of the top photographers now in the Northern Neck. And Madeline, she's a school teacher in the public schools at Leicester. And she's a designer, wedding parties, baby showers and whatnot. And Autumn, she's a probation officer, and she does her baking. And now she's getting so large in that, might have to build her a bakery. My son in Williamsburg, he's a computer technician in the Tidewater area, and he works on computers on the side. That's getting to be now where they're making more money on the second job than what they're doing on the first job. So I tell them, you know, when you do it, you know, you give it your best. And if you do that, you give it your best, man. I did what my father, your uncle, them did, passed it on. Just like Kurt getting a boat now. See, he owe a lot of that to your uncle, Carl. And see, and with me, I passed it on to probably, I have about 8 or 9 guys that have worked for me that have the captain license now. And I have really stressed that through my whole career. They have some type of license. You get that license now, you're gonna get paid that money. They can't take that away from you. All you got to do is keep them valid. So that's my suggestion to them now. And I always try to instill in them and give them words of encouragement. You know, if you're going to do it, you got to give it your best now. You can't go into it halfway. So that's what I try to instill in them.
Matt, this has been great. This has been great. Make us truly proud about being from the Northern Neck, but also about how we as Black people living on the Northern Neck, just the achievements that we have, the people that came before us, how they pushed us forward to be the people that we are, and hopefully that the people that we are, that we're going to push the younger generation to keep achieving. And just being on the Northern Neck, we're not from some little backwards little place. We come from a place of glory, accomplishments, beauty, family, faith. We have dreams, aspirations, and that's never going to be taken away from us. We are who we are.
And that's very true. Yep, that is very true. And all of our, in the Northern Neck now, most of the people there now, generations from our parents down, most of them actually are probably doing what either their fathers or their grandfathers or somebody in their family was doing as far as carpenter work, bricklayers, fishermen, mechanics, farmers, all of them are still doing what was taught to them years ago. And that's one thing I like about the Northern Neck, that tradition. When it's passed down to you, just like I told my son and my daughters, I said, y'all go and do what y'all want to do. Don't follow in your dad's footsteps. You don't have to do what I've done. My son wasn't an athlete playing ball. He played soccer. I said, son, you play soccer and be the best soccer player you can be. As far as computers, during our generation, I never got into the computers that much. I thank God that we didn't have cell phones when we were coming up. I tell you, that would have really been bad for us. Sometimes I'm sorry we got them now. Social media, it's been good to catch up with old friends and things, but the abuse that I see on social media, some people just misuse it so bad. It could be a good thing, but of course, that's another story. The fishermen there, every fisherman in Reedville and Louisiana now, I guarantee you that somebody in their family was a fisherman. So everything around that Northern Neck, man, it's a beautiful thing. Now, we're probably any black oysterman now. Most of them just white guys now, but I had been asked to do it again. I still have oyster ground there. But now, I just rather buy oyster from the store now instead of catching them, trying to keep my body reserved now for 6 months or more, to do something else and enjoy my family, maybe do a little traveling and talk to people like yourself.
Thank you. Thank you. That's from the daughter of a waterman who are the children of watermen. I appreciate hearing your perspective. I just know that the Gaskins, y'all have your own little town.
Yeah, we live on Gaskins Road.
I tell you, that's hot stuff right there.
And that is truly an accomplishment, man. But you know what, though? And I'm not ashamed to thank my... like I said, my ancestors, man, and my people, we were raised to, in a certain way. And that's the way when they instill that in us, man, it goes on. And our job was to instill the same thing in our children. You teach them to love, black or white. And like I said, the things that they have gone through, the discrimination that they have gone through, they have came back and talked about it with me. But they are, then again, though, they also have daddy's personality, and daddy will speak his mind. And my children got a lot of their daddy in them, too. So, but you keep it cool, you get your point across. And that's why I've taught them all to learn more than one trade. And when you learn more than one trade, you give the people that you're working for an ultimatum. And then when you're good at what you do, they will miss you. And I always tell them, but do it. Another one will open for you. And sometimes it's for the better. And, I've been seeked out by a lot of different fishing companies. They wanted to pay me more money. And one wanted to get me because they didn't have a black captain. And the NAACP had came in on them. And they wanted to hire me. And I told them, there's a whole lot of black captains out here that you can hire. I'm satisfied on where I am. There's several captains that was out there that had master license that never got bricks. You have mates that didn't have license, and you had mates that actually fished the boat for those white captains that didn't have a captain's license, but caught the fish for the white captain. And on the Chesapeake Bay, your uncle went in the boats and caught his own fish. And those top captains up there, they didn't go on no boats and catch their own fish. They had somebody doing it for them. That's what I don't like about up north, but what's going on there and down south here. They want them to work on Saturdays and Sundays. And these guys think that it's mandatory, and it's not. We have lives. I have children. I'm not going to miss my children's graduations. I'm not going to miss birthdays if we have to do it on weekend, because we already got to change our schedules because we are working 6 months out of the year. And now if the weather's bad Monday and Tuesday, they want us to work Saturday and Sunday to make those days up. I told them we can't control Mother Nature. And we have a season down here, like I said, a start and a finish. But down here, they want us to work on weekends, and they want to pay us double for it, but don't want to raise the pay the way it used to be. I always have said that if this business had all whites working in it, the whites would be getting what the captains are getting right now. The crews would be getting what the captains are getting, and the captains would be making $300,000-$400,000 a year, because this is a multi-million-dollar business. With this fish oil peels and and now in the food business. They got contracts with Kellogg's, Kraft, the big name companies. They're really doing a lot with the fish meal and the product that we're catching, shipping it overseas just as fast as they can. And what they do, they have it already sold before we have caught the first fish in the Gulf right now.
Wow.
They have the product already sold. So, see, and I know all of these things. So, you know, if you make a stand, and I have brought a lot of changes into this business, got the pay risen for them. You know, they come to me being a captain that they can trust and talk to. They have came to me with their problems, and I tell them, y'all want to get paid a guarantee for they wanted a guarantee for $2 million. I said, no, you tell them you want a guarantee for $3 million. They are going to compromise with you, making it $2,200. So they got it more than what it was, and that's what we're getting in the Gulf now. Right now, for a guaranteed pay, when I was a captain back, an active captain, fishing a boat, I was getting no guarantee. I wasn't getting paid a dime for my license. I was only getting paid on fish catch. Now, I'm a captain now bringing fish to the dock from the other boats, and they pay me for my license $300 a day. They pay me the $2,200 guarantee, and they pay me for the fish that I bring in. So I really make more money from now doing what I do now, doing less to work, just more or less working levers and running the boats up and down the Gulf. I can bring home $4,000 in 2 weeks if we don't do nothing. If the wind blow or we have a hurricane, my check. And I couldn't do that being a captain. So, you know, it almost paid me better to not to be a captain than to be a captain as far as working hard and putting a crew together and trying to maintain them and keep an eye on the crew and trying to keep men on the boat sober, keep them away from these drug tests. I tell you, man, it's a job there. With your uncle being on the Chesapeake Bay, you know, and those guys, man, wanting to go home, you know, they always say, well, Captain, man, you know, you can stay out here all week. We can't do that. I said, train yourself to do it, you know. Fisherman is a special breed of man.
Yes.
Everybody can't do it. It's a special breed of man to do what we do. As they say, it's in our blood. Like I said, fishing has been ups and downs for me. It has made me a good life, good living. I mean, you know, as far as material things. And it's, you know, and like I said, it's been some bad. But now I have a relationship with my kids now that, boy, I'm enjoying my kids now, having kids of their own and enjoying them like as if they were still young. That's just the way we love each other. And the feeling is so good. And the smile on my face, people say, Matt, I've never seen you so happy.
So I'm going to say goodbye for today. I again want to thank you for helping me, Matt.
But all right, sweetheart. You have a blessed day.
You too, Matt. And thank you. And I'll be talking to you again, okay?
Okay, dear.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Living a life of adventure, honoring your elders, guiding the young. Everyone can be a leader. In all your choices in life, remember your choices will be part of your legacy. Make them count. The music by Robert A. Hall. This interview is dedicated to the black businesses that service so faithfully and honorably the black communities of the four counties of the Northern Neck. Thank you for listening.